So after Korea, what is next?
I was reassigned to Luke Air Force Base near Phoenix, and I was a gunnery instructor. I usually fly three missions a day, instruction. But I had finished my three missions, and I was talking to Jim Merritt, a buddy of mine, and this guy walked in. I didn't know him, and he introduced himself as Ed Palmgren, called us over to the side, both of us. He says, "We are getting ready to select a new member of the Thunderbirds. Your name has been forwarded that you probably have what it takes." Well, needless to say, that was very flattering. He said, "Now you go home and clock it over with your wife, and then come back at 7 o'clock in the morning down to the Thunderbird office and tell us what your decision is." We both said, "Okay." Well, Jim Merritt, he went home and his wife just had a hissy fit because it was a lot of travel. I went home and I told my wife that I'd been asked to try out. She said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to give it a shot." So I went in the next morning and I said, "Yeah, I'd like to try out." They had invited eight people, eight pilots. Two of them flew the F-84F, which was a different airplane than the straight-wing 84. It was a swept-wing air. It had a full power control system, which means it's really tough to handle until you get used to it. There were two of them that were already proficient in the airplane. And I thought, well, I don't have a chance, but at least I'll get to fly the F-84F, if nothing else. Well, this is 2.5 or 3 weeks, I forget which one. It was a real workout. I mean, two or three missions a day is really a lot of work. I had been putting hot water bottles on my right arm, you know, because it's really a real tough workout. Anyway, 2.5 weeks later, he said, "Okay, well, tryouts are over. You come back in the morning, and we'll give you the answer."
So then, obviously, you come in that next day.
Yeah, and it was kind of almost like a hazing. I walked in, and the leader said, "Go ahead and have a seat." I looked around, and the other guys wouldn't make eye contact with me. And I thought, oh, this is not good. But anyway, Jack Broughton, who was the leader, said, "Well, Bill, we think you're a great pilot, and you've worked real hard. And if you want the job, it's yours." And then everybody busted out laughing. And then pulled their little joke on me.
Yep.
And I've met everybody on the team. In fact, one of them was from Tulsa, Bob Anderson. He's already on the team.
He must have been elated.
Oh, yeah. The people down at the squadron, they knew what I was up against. Later, I learned that all that tryout, all that flying and workout, they said, "You weren't necessarily the best pilot, but you worked harder than anybody else." Hmm. And we were looking for somebody with a burning desire. Otherwise, you don't know where you can trust the person or not. Hmm. That was the start of 2 years of a real joy.
What makes that F-84F so difficult?
Well, it's a full power control system, which probably doesn't mean anything to you, but it's an artificial feel. What you do is you trim it out so that you're having to hold pressure. Because if you go through the neutral point, you'll go out of control. It's called a PIO, pilot-induced oscillation, and that can scare you. So you deliberately hold force, and you're doing this while you're flying formation. So that made it doubly difficult.
This was a good experience. Did you have any bad luck?
Yes. I had a series, a six-month period, I couldn't get in an airplane without having problems. I had two flameouts. One of them I had to eject. The other one I got it on the ground. I had oil pressure failures, about three. I lost a drag chute deployed while I was in the air. No one wanted to fly with me because every time I raised the gear, something had happened to this airplane. There were more than that. I've documented it in the book. It was really strange. But finally, I stopped having so much trouble.
You flew the newest fighter?
It was a new plane, but it was not capable of supersonic flight in level flight. The F-100 is the one that was being tested while I was in Korea, as a matter of fact. And Bob Hoover, who was the chief test pilot of North American, became a good friend. He was really good. I look back on that period of time as probably one of the most exciting periods of my career.
Because the F-100 could fly at supersonic speed?
Yeah, in level flight. Although when I first got on the team, I was flying the F-84F. The commanding general of the Air Training Command said he wanted to indoctrinate the American people to the sonic boom. I was flying solo at that time. And when we transitioned into the F-100, I had to work out a routine for the F-100. Now, in the slower airplanes, they did not need a solo pilot. But when the planes got faster, in order to go from one maneuver to the next, you had to go up and do a turnaround maneuver and get spacing and so forth. It was a good airplane, the F-100 was, but I could do better aerobatics than the F-84F, really.
Did you open the show with the Thunderbirds?
Yes, with the sonic boom. That caused all kinds of grief. We were getting all kinds of bad press.
But it didn't stop you from doing it.
No, no. As a matter of fact, the leader says, the thing that's causing the problem is that when you're going supersonic, you're swiping the shockwave all over everywhere. The leader said, what you do is you come on from behind the crowd, you pull straight up, and you do vertical rolls going straight up, and then you split S, that is to say you turn the plane up until you're going straight down. And then, as soon as you get the indication that you've gone faster than the speed of sound, you just take it out of burner, and then you can go ahead and recover. I did this, and that was working out pretty well. This is in the summer of 1956. It was August. We're going to fly a show at Tyndall Air Force Base, which is at Panama City, Florida, in August. Now, that means it's hot, and that means that the engine is not going to produce as much thrust as it would ordinarily. I was supposed to top out 20,000 feet. I knew I wasn't going to get to 20,000 feet. But anyway, I got the thing pointed straight down with full afterburner. Then I watched for the indication, and then I took it out of burner and started my recovery. I pulled over 10 Gs in my recovery, and I wasn't sure I was going to make the pullout. It looked so hairy that the narrator stopped talking. I cleared the ground by a good 50 feet, and I started climbing. Then all of a sudden, I heard this horrendous noise. It's a pop, explosion. My G-suit had actually blown up. I was pulling so many Gs that the bladders in the G-suit, those things, the tighter you pull, the more the bladders expand to press against your muscles, your abdomen, and your legs. I went ahead and flew the rest of the show and came back in. The engineering officer, as soon as I taxied in, he climbed up and wanted to look at the G-meter. It was over 10. I never did that again.
But you didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, no. I was just gung-ho.
Did you say you came down within how many feet of Earth?
50.
50 feet.
Again, that's what I thought I'd hit, see, because when that G-suit blew up, it blew at the hose. Not only did it blow up, but the G-suit valve was stuck open full. And so when the G-suit blew up, the air had to go someplace, so it just came into the cockpit. It was hot. Real hot air.
Was there any danger that you could have lost consciousness and all of that?
Sure. I had had high blood pressure my whole life. And this one doctor said, I think the only reason you're alive is because you have high blood pressure.
Yeah, well, let me just say, so it is something you purposely did.
Yes.
But it hadn't been part of your plans before.
See, I had gone up that morning, and at 10 o'clock, I did the maneuver. I was out over the swamp. Well, air show time was up 2 o'clock, I think. It was the hottest part of the day. And that's what robbed my engine of thrust. The air was hot.
So some of that you didn't have any control over is
no,
what I'm trying to
correct.
Get to. Right.
That's correct.
So we should point out, the Thunderbirds were really barnstorming, weren't they?
Well, you could call it that,
right.
Yeah.
But it was a promotional air show for the Air Force.
It is, and it's the recruiting officers. The general in charge of recruiting really had a hissy fit when they said they were going to disband the Thunderbirds. Blue Angels had the same problem. We flew about 3 shows a year together, so we knew them all. When we were down at Eglin Air Force Base, we would drive over to visit the Blue Angels at their home base. It was certainly an exciting time.